Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Yes, hello, good morning. Welcome to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, campus community radio from Simon Fraser University. We broadcast on the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, Stolo, Catesy, Coquitlam, and other Coast Salish peoples. My name is Jesse, and today on the show I'm bringing you a series of interviews that Public Affairs Department Work Study Matthew put together about the Poetry in Transit project, which has been running since 1996, basically in collaboration with TransLink and BC Transit. Books BC produces a collection of poetry car cards annually, which feature the works of BC authored and Canadian published poets. It's been going for 27 years, and you can find these poems in buses and trains and other public transit devices. We're just going to get right into that because it's going to take most of the hour. So enjoy these conversations done by Matthew.
Today we have with us Rob Taylor. He's a juror for the Poetry in Transit program. He is also the author of four poetry collections. His individual poems, short stories, essays, and interviews have appeared in more than 60 journals and magazines, including The Walrus, Brick, The Fiddlehead, The Malahat Review, and The Literary Review of Canada. In 2014, he was named one of the inaugural writers in residence at the Alperdi Frame. And in 2015, he received the City of Vancouver Mayor's Arts Award for the Literary Arts. So first off, Rob, how did the idea of Poetry in Transit start?
The program is 26th or 27th year, so it's been around for a long time. I was quite young when it started. My understanding is that there was a program like this that existed in New York City, and the poet Sandy Shreve, who lives here in Vancouver, was interested in replicating that program in Canada and approached BC Transit at that point about it, and did a bunch of work and got their enthusiasm up, and it was started. And the idea behind it is to give people art in public spaces, to give people in a place where they're not usually thinking expansively or using their creative mind or having a reprieve from the grind of a workday, you know, to give them that little oasis in this little shape of a placard on a bus where they can relax or be challenged or be entertained or whatever it might be given with a given poem. And since then, it's proven extremely popular. It's such, at least for me, I'm sure I've heard from many other people as well, just the joy of you look up and instead of, every once in a while, instead of seeing an ad, you see this beautiful work of art. And it just has a rejuvenative effect on your day. Yeah.
Now, when it comes to the funding intensity, is there like a funding plan when it comes to, is it only limited to a certain amount of like cities? Like, is it only in Vancouver or Surrey or Burnaby, or also extends to Abbotsford, Victoria?
Yeah, so it's a partnership between TransLink and BC Transit. So I believe that they start in Vancouver, so they're on the buses and SkyTrains in Vancouver, and then over the course of the year, they move out to other municipalities. So you'll see them throughout the province. But sometimes 1 year will be coming, the next year will be going. The timing of it changes as they move around, but they circulate them all throughout the province over the course of the year.
Okay. And yeah. When it comes to the poets, what do you want to give, shed more light into the selection process? What are the steps taken? Does the program take a chance to market it to interested poets, or how is that? How does that go around getting the poets to be more involved and more interested in contributing their work?
So the program is a partnership between the transit organizations and the Association of BC Book Publishers. So all of the poems are derived from books of Canadian poetry. So it's not that individual poems are submitted for consideration. They have to have been published in a book previously. And then the publishers submit samples of either very small poems, because the poems can't be too big to get on the bus. So they either submit fully completed small poems or excerpts from longer poems that would be short enough to fit on the bus. They submit those for consideration, and that's by publishers across Canada. But all the writers whose work is submitted are writers who live here in British Columbia.
And to you, what's your best part about working at the JIRA for this specific program?
Well, I mean, for me, it's it's just amazing to me every day that I get to be involved in it, because when the program first started, I was, I'll date myself here, you can do the math, but I was, 12, 13 years old, kind of. My father had died when I was 11, and I was, adrift, as most teenagers are, but, a little bit more so. And the Poetry in Transit poems were just so exciting for me. I still live in Port Moody in the suburbs, and there weren't independent bookstores or poetry events everywhere for me to engage with. It was really, other than having a few books of my father's poetry, not like books of his, he didn't write them, but, books that he enjoyed in the house, there was really very little exposure to poetry. And then I would get on the bus and I'd be able to see these strange and wonderful, things that were so foreign to me. And I started getting, every time I'd get on the bus throughout my teenage years, I'd be kind of patrolling the bus first. I'd go up and down and see if there were any poems on it. And then that would help me decide where to sit on the bus, because I'd want to sit and read and experience that. So Poetry in Transit was one of the very first introductions I had to poetry, and certainly to contemporary poetry written by British Columbians, the people around me. And it made it feel possible to be a poet and possible to love, words in my local community. So I just was thrilled that the program existed. And then when my first book came out, I was lucky enough to have a poem on Poetry in Transit. And I thought all my life's dreams had been accomplished at that moment. I couldn't imagine anything more. So when a few years ago they asked me if I would sit on the jury, that was a dream beyond my dreams, to be able to help facilitate the same thing for other people. So I'm just always kind of floating that I get to be a part of this at all.
Oh, that's good to hear. And when it comes to back then, you mentioned that you like just seeing the poems on the transit link. Over the years, have there been any poets or poems that you've actually loved reading a lot, or something that's like quite memorable to you?
Yeah, I mean, quite a few, especially since I've been on the jury, because then I get this double excitement of reading the poem for the first time when it's submitted, and then going out and seeing it in the world and seeing somebody interact with it. There's actually, we went full circle. Now that the program's 27 years old, there's a poet named Belay Nickerson who had a poem in the series years ago, and then about a decade later, he had a second poem in the series that was about people's reaction to his poem the first time it went on the bus. So seeing, my favorite memories are definitely being present when people who perhaps don't read or discuss poetry very often are saying, hey, look at that, what do you think about that? And maybe one of them loves it and one of them doesn't, and they're having a little discussion, and I'm just kind of eavesdropping and being a part of it. Those moments that happen on the bus are absolutely my favorites. But also along the way, I've met some poets like the poet Dallas Hunt, who I didn't know before and whose poems blew me away. And I think about all the time that are poems that have gone around on the buses.
Okay. And when it comes to like poetry, it's more of sometimes the religious perspective, what you get understanding again from it. So when a juror is selecting a poem, what is the one thing you're looking out for, or what the one thing that you aim to you want the readers to notice?
Well, I mean, you're looking for all sorts of things. One thing is a sense of a big reach, but also accomplishing something. The poet Charles Simic once said, the problem with a big poem is you have to be brief, but tell us everything. It has to do both those things at once. So the sense that someone is saying something that is big and important to themselves, or just very entertaining, and then that they can complete that within the limit of 14 lines, which is as far as this can go. I'm looking for those two, the expansiveness and the kind of tightness and completeness of actually having arrived somewhere at 14 lines as opposed to just ending because you ran out of space.
Yeah. And when it comes to the program, has there been any difficulty in the recent years with continuity? Has there been like any worry with that? As in like, especially when COVID came around and people weren't moving as much anymore. Was there like any concern that would the program continue or would it end then?
I don't think there was concern around it other than, of course, that period where transit ridership dropped off considerably. But the program itself, you know, this is it's a nice distanced activity. Books are a nice distanced activity. Reading a poem on a bus is a distanced activity. So, and also, so that was sustainable, we thought. And also, I think the program became more vital in many ways when people were riding the bus, you know, everyone was masked. No one was really communicating with one another. We weren't having the kind of social interactions we had. But when you read a poem, I find it's the most companionable form of literature. Like the author is the most present there. You can almost hear their speaking, natural speaking rhythms. You can almost feel their breath. You know, like there's something to the rhythmic nature of poetry that makes that author present to you. And I feel for me, reading poetry was really vital to feeling less alone and feeling connected with other people during the peak moments of COVID. And that, you know, I think, and I, you know, from what I heard anecdotally from people, having those poems there on the buses was a real lifeline at times. And I don't think that changes as we move away from that peak COVID moment. I think that desire for connection and belonging within your community and within the physical spaces you're in is really high, and that poetry in transit does such a good job to facilitate that in its small way.
And outside of the program, you have a very keen interest in poetry. Are there like any poets' books that you've enjoyed reading, or any, what do you call, like outside of poetry? I know there's a lot of them, but
there's a scene in The Simpsons where Mr. Burns is sick, and he says, "But you're not. Why am I not dying? It's because all the diseases are trying to get through the door at once, and none of them can get through because you have so many." Not that poets are diseases; it's the opposite. But I feel things I love. You're like, pick one. I'm like, I can't do that. No, there's so many poets whose work I really, really admire. One poet who's working in these kind of shorter spaces, like shorter poems that are really very compelling, who I've been drawn to lately, is Ali Blythe, who's a poet in Victoria, who's written three books, all with very small, kind of minimal, beautiful poems. And his new one, Steadfast, just came out this fall. And another poet who I really love is Matsuki Masutani, who was a poet I discovered during Poetry in Transit. I just randomly came upon these poems and fell in love. And again, small, often quite funny poems. He lives on a Gulf island and writes about all the strange characters on the island with him. And not my world at all, but a world that I'm so excited to be welcomed into whenever I read his poems. So those are a couple that come to mind. But there's so much talent out there. It's amazing. It's a painful process every year to only be able to choose 10 poems to put on the buses. You want to put on 50 or 60 of them. Yeah.
That's interesting. So aside of 10 selected poems, do the rest get to be considered for the following year, or they have to be entirely different poems?
So a book's poems are eligible for, I think it's 3 years. So the year it comes out plus the next two. To be considered. So if they're not selected in 1 year, they can be resubmitted and considered again. The idea being, it's some years a great poem or a poet might get missed that shouldn't have, but also we're trying to celebrate new books that came out and encourage people to look up those books and buy them. So we want to keep it somewhat fresh and relevant.
And or they're encouraging people to buy books and look into poetry. Is there any focus on a specific generation? As let's say, when it comes to like Gen Z specifically, more people like, we are on our phones more, we don't really notice stuff. So is there kind of like a worry when it comes to that? Are they going to notice the poetry? Has it been like that kind of interest?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have the statistics on this at hand, but I remember that when there was a survey, it was the younger you got, the higher up the positivity rating for Poetry in Transit was, you know. And I think that goes back to what I was saying about my own childhood. When you're younger, you're looking for people who may see the world the way you do or understand the world the way you do. And when every time you're on the bus, there's, you know, just ads for cars or, or whatever it might be, it can feel like a very cold, alien, unwelcoming place, right? So I think that those poems are always welcome. I also think an interesting thing that's happened is Poetry in Transit for 27 years has been promoting this little square of a few, you know, not too many words. It's a pretty short poem kind of shape for what a poem could be in Poetry in Transit. And then Instagram comes along and all the Instagram poets come along who are proving so popular. And that's a little square with a small number of words in it, right? So in many ways, that shape is a shape that Poetry in Transit has been promoting for a long time. And I think there is a familiarity there, which is probably higher for a younger generation of readers of, you know what a poem looks like. You know what something like this is going to be like. You can stop and enjoy it. Whereas I think somebody who's older, it might be actually a little more foreign to them. So definitely, I definitely think there's appeal for younger writers and younger readers, and that's definitely a priority of ours too.
Going forward, is it like expansion? Is that where you guys are looking to expand throughout Canada? Or
So Vancouver was the first place in Canada to adopt a program like this, and a number of other cities have taken them on. So I don't have the full list of it, but I'm pretty sure Halifax has one, Toronto has one, Ottawa, probably other places too. So it has expanded in that sense. It's not one big program. It's done by the different transit authorities and arts organizations in those different cities. But it's definitely expanded and proved very popular. And it's also always innovating. 2 years ago, we brought in photography to join the poem. So it used to be that the cover of the book that the poem is from was next to the poem. But now we've brought in photographs from community photographers living in British Columbia that kind of speak to the same themes or that in some way connect with the poem. And those are what are featured next to the poems now. So they're always innovating and finding new ways for the poems to catch your eye and draw you in when you're on transit. Yeah.
Well, that's actually quite interesting. So there's a partnership between photography and then the poet as well. Do they have the poets and the photographers collaborating sometimes, or just does separate kind of processes?
Yeah, it's a tricky process because they want to keep secret what the poems are until the announcement, and they want to have the pictures already attached to that. So they what they do is kind of suggest some key words, like we're looking for photos that are sunny or that are about whales or that are, you know, set on a rainy day in transit or something. And then they get submissions in those ways that where there's a higher likelihood that they will connect. So yeah, this year, if you go to poetryintransit.ca and you look up this year's images, you'll see that there's really lovely connections between the poems that were selected and the photographs that were selected. So it's pretty neat to check them all out.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for answering all my questions.
Oh, yeah,
I appreciate the time you took today.
Oh, it's amazing. And I really appreciate you shining a spotlight on Poetry in Transit, because it's a lovely program, but it can get taken for granted after a while.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's always there, you know. And so it's nice to really celebrate the poets who are in there and celebrate the program.
That's true.
That was Rob Taylor, one of the jurors for the Poetry in Transit program. Next up, we have Emily Osborne, a poet whose debut book of poetry, Safety Razor, is featured in this year's collection of poems for the program.
Introducing Emily Osborne, a versatile and accomplished poet whose literary footprint extends across poetry, short fiction, and Old Norse to English various translations. Her creative works have found homes in prestigious journals and anthologies such as Volume, CV2, The Polyglot, The Literary Review of Canada, Byron Magazine, and Althingi, The Crescent and the Northern Star. Osborne is the author of the poetry book, chapbook Biometrical, published by Anstruther Press, showcasing her distinctive voice and poetic prowess. Born and raised in London, Ontario, she embarked on an academic journey that led her to the United Kingdom, where she completed a Master's of Philosophy and a doctorate at Cambridge University, specializing in Old English and Old Norse Icelandic literature. Welcome, Emily.
Oh, thank you for the introduction, and thank you for having me, Matthew. It's great to be here.
That's great. First, I want to start with your education. Why Old English and Old Norse specifically?
I've always been fascinated by languages and, you know, cultures that are not immediately familiar to us and what is preserved in the literature. I love poetry. My mother is a poet, and I grew up, you know, filled in a house with a house full of poetry. So studying literature was probably not, you know, the most unexpected path for me. I studied English literature in undergraduate and then specialized in Old English. And I went to Cambridge to do the master's in Old English. And while I was there, I was introduced to the Old Norse literature, and I was fascinated because there's this massive corpus and it hasn't been looked at in the same way as Old English. And the poetry is so complex and, you know, the layers of meaning, it's riddling. It has these, you know, gorgeous cadences and alliterations and internal rhymes. And so I launched in, and it was an absolutely fascinating area of study.
And then were there diverse writing style which you used to enrich your overall creative expression?
Absolutely. I think the attention to sound that you see in an alliterative verse makes me so much more attentive to sound in my own craft. And also I translate poetry. That's one of the things that I'm doing right now, is translating a volume of Old Norse skaldic poetry into English. And that process of, you know, in a translation, you're always looking for the right word, the kind of perfect word to fit in with these requirements. And that makes me much more attuned to, you know, finding kind of the perfect word in a line, if there could ever be a perfect word, when I'm writing my own poetry.
Moving from London to Ontario to like Bowen Island, BC, we know like most writers always like their surroundings matter a lot and it influences their writing. So how did moving to British Columbia specifically change, or did it have any effect on your writing? Did it change how you saw things or change your perspective when you came to writing?
I think, yeah, it's an interesting question, because the actual like British Columbian landscape has started to come into my poetry more, but it took a few years after moving here. I moved here in 2014. I think one of the biggest effects for me was I met my husband, Daniel Cowper, who's also a poet, and he really encouraged me to kind of, after my academic journey, to get back into my like personal creative writing, and having that companionship really helped. Bowen Island is also a great place for writing. It's quiet, you know, being surrounded by nature is amazing, having the ocean right there. There's a sense in which, you know, the fjords here in Howe Sound look a lot like the fjords in Norway. So when I'm translating, you know, a 10th century Norwegian poet, there's a way in which I can imagine their landscape that I might not be able to if I was in a different location.
You mentioned your husband always pushing and supporting you. So living on Bowen Island with your family, how do you manage to balance the responsibilities of family life with your creative pursuits?
It's been really difficult. We have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. And, you know, our 2-year-old was born kind of in the depths of COVID lockdowns. Mm. We did not have childcare. So there were 2 years there where I basically didn't write at all. And I've been getting back into it a little more lately, with our 2 children being in preschool a couple days a week. So that gives me a few hours a week to really get back into it. But I think for both Daniel and I, there's been a lot of times where when we need quiet, we stay up late, even though we're exhausted, or get up early, even though we're exhausted. And also just the supporting each other. I mean, it's hard because he's working full time and I'm taking care of the kids most of the time, but we're trying to give each other time and space for those creative responsibilities. And, you know, when we need to get that writing done.
That's good to hear. And then your debut book in the Poetry in Transit program, City Ways, first of all, why did you submit your book to the Poetry in Transit program?
I think just when I moved to Vancouver and I saw, you know, the poems on the bus, I thought like, this is an amazing program. And it had always been in my mind that I would love to have a book and be able to submit. So I think as soon as my book came out, I looked for when the submission deadline was. And I didn't expect to be chosen. So it was just, you know, a moment of elation to find out that my poem would be on the bus. I was in town last week and I rode 4 different buses and looked for looked for my poem, but, you know, didn't see it, but enjoyed the ones that were there. So,
yeah. But how did the process of writing Safety Razor differ from your previous works, such as the poetry chapbook Biometrical?
Sorry, I couldn't hear all of that. How does the process of writing this book differ from your previous works?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think assembling a full-length collection, you know, choosing all the poems that you want to go in it and making it cohesive, but also wide-ranging at the same time is definitely different from a chapbook. And, you know, there are a lot more angles that you can bring in to a full-length book. I think one of the main differences with Safety Razor to Biometrical, my chapbook, is that Safety Razor also has translations woven into it. So there are really themes of tradition in it, you know, a wide time span, like moving through, you know, a human life time span and also moving through geological time, art history. So kind of how all these different time spans inform each other. So I guess I was really thinking big picture for this in a way that, you know, assembling the chapbook was not so much.
Were there specific challenges to creating the debut book?
I think, yeah, for me, I suppose one of the challenges was just, you know, I was pregnant with our second child and exhausted and, you know, really wanting to get a book out there, but, you know, just challenges of time and physical exhaustion, and the material was there, but putting it all together, you know, was difficult, but of course, really rewarding when it does actually make its way out into the world.
During the time, could you share a bit about your writing rituals and processes? Like, is there a habit? Do you like sit down, like get your lazy chair and like write, or do you go into the scene? You mentioned how the fields of Bowen Island really resemble Norway. So do you go out and watch them and write, or what works for you? What triggers your creative process?
Yeah, different things, but often going out for a walk is a time where, you know, I'm out of the house, I'm away from all those like parental and household responsibilities, and I can just think about things I've been reading and, you know, thinking and, you know, what I'm responding to around me. So often on walks is when I have ideas for poems, and then just when I have the time to write, just grabbing that.
We mentioned that in the past few years, when you were pregnant with your son, you struggled to write a bit. Was that some sort of writer's block, or have you experienced writer's block early in your career, and how have you dealt with it?
Yeah, I've definitely experienced writer's block at different points. And I think one of my strategies has been to just read in another genre. If I'm having writer's block with my poetry, just kind of leave poetry aside for a bit. Read nonfiction, read fiction. One of the things that I like to do is just, you know, read about subjects I'm interested in, whether that's thunderstorms that I'm fascinated by, or, you know, some particular historical period. Just read widely, and inevitably there'll be something that I find interesting enough to, you know, want to write about. So, yeah.
Is that, I think that you place a really high value on knowledge as well. Okay. Yeah. That's coming from like a background, your mom being a poet as well.
I think so. And just a curiosity, you know, about so many different subjects and, you know, just wanting to explore a lot of different ideas in poetry.
And do those different interests play, like, go into the books as well? Did they influence your writing? There's certain ideas that you see, you read, like, let's say you read a fact somewhere, does it inspire you to add it to one of your books or any of your writings?
Absolutely, yeah. The second section of Safety Razor is all looking back at, you know, kind of art history, geological time. A lot of it is inspired, you know, by things I've read that I'm interested in. You know, there's a long eulogy in it to Jumbo the Elephant, who, you know, I was a figure in my childhood growing up in Ontario. That's where his statue is. And so just reading about him as an adult, you know, inspired a poem. There are a lot of poems about weather because I find weather and storms interesting. So a lot of little facts about weather, you know, come into things, and, you know, just facts about the body, memory. Memory is a theme throughout the book. And I find memory studies and the science of memory really interesting because there's just no consensus. And I think poetry is often a space where people explore memory and how memory is preserved or distorted. And it's interesting how science just has, you know, not a lot of consensus about how, like, the brain forms memory, how early